Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking, I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Hello and welcome to New Books in Technology. I am your host, Jasmine McNeely. You know, the continued growth of online gaming and virtual world has effects not only in the analog world with games and social media organizations taking stock options public, but also in the worlds created online. So many games and platforms allow users to involve themselves in virtual labor, to own property, and most importantly, to make purchases. And this is one of the areas where the analog and the virtual cross over. And the question for the platform providers becomes, how do we capitalize on user interest while earning money? So to help answer this question today, we have Vili Leonvirta, a research fellow at the Oxford Internet Institute at University of Oxford, and co-author of the new book, Virtual Economies, Design and Analysis, written with Edward Castronova of Indiana University. So Vili, thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you very much, Jasmine.
So, just as a background, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got interested in, you know, virtual economies.
Absolutely. Well, I'm from Finland originally, mm-hmm. and I used to play a lot of online games, and I even worked as a game programmer for a while during my undergraduate studies. And then when I was looking for a thesis topic for my master's thesis, I noticed that some people on eBay were trading virtual items from online games for real money. So this was around 2003, 2004. So I noticed that there were people posting things like virtual castles in a fantasy game on eBay, and other people bidding on those castles, and the castle could be sold for hundreds of dollars. And I looked into this a little bit and found that there was very little research on this topic. It was basically just Professor Edward Castronova, who I'm very lucky to have as my co-author in mm-hmm. this book today, 10 years later. But that's basically how I got into the whole area.
Well, what are your degrees in?
Sure. So I have a very kind of multidisciplinary background, but basically I introduced myself as an economic sociologist. Mm-hmm. So economic sociologists are usually interested in the social, technical, and institutional underpinnings of markets. So what makes markets possible and what shapes markets? And so I'm interested in, from that perspective, you could say that I'm interested in what are the underpinnings of these online marketplaces for virtual goods that no one before thought that had any actual market value.
Okay.
And but I also studied computer science and business, and so I do have a very technical background as well. But my doctorate is from the Turku School of Economics in Finland, mm-hmm. from economic sociology. I also worked briefly at London School of Economics and in Japan at University of Tokyo and Waseda University, which obviously is a very nice place to study games and gaming.
Sure, sure. So you have this new book, virtual economies design and analysis. Why now? Why virtual economies design and analysis?
Sure. So what you can see happening right now, or happening for several years already now, is that the kinds of virtual economies that you see in online games are increasingly also being embedded into all kinds of digital services. So you have question and answer sites with virtual points that people use to reward each other. You have Reddit Gold and so on. You have things like Facebook likes and Twitter followers being traded for real money, and sort of economies emerging around these kinds of virtual assets. Mm-hmm. And then finally, also gaming, very simply gaming as an industry, is just keeps on growing. And it's shifting from a model where you buy a box from a shop into a model where you're basically paying for virtual goods and paying for virtual currencies. Mm-hmm. And what we've found talking to developers, people who build these games and build these services, is that there's a real need for theory and for advice on how do you build these systems. Because it's not obvious when you build a system and a marketplace or a virtual currency, you have an idea in your head how you're hoping that users would use it and how it would sort of play out. But often then what happens is once you launch it, it turns out that the actual end result that results, the equilibrium state, as economists would call it, that results from the interactions of thousands or even hundreds of thousands of users in your system, leads into some completely different, unexpected result that you didn't expect.
Sure.
And basically what we're saying with this book is, look, that you can use the tools of elementary economics to try to predict and plan your economy before you launch it. So that's the kind of message that we're saying to practitioners, that here's a toolbox for you to use if you're building a virtual currency, a game with a virtual economy, or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, one of the things that I noted when I was reading your book, you talk about in the beginning the movement or progression from just an online community, whether that's, you know, a forum or, you know, question and answer place or a social media site like Twitter or Facebook, to an economy. So
That's right. How
does that progression happen? What is
Sure. The
mechanism for that?
Well, you know, let me explain the difference. So economics is, of course, it's a science of scarcity. And scarcity basically means that something exists in lesser quantity than would be required to satisfy all demand for it. Okay. So not everyone can have everything. People have to make choices and prioritize things. And economics basically studies the patterns and laws that emerge when thousands or millions of people make this kind of give and take decisions in interaction with each other, right? So that's economics. But then in the digital world, we're used to thinking that things are not scarce, that digital information is abundant. If I see two MP3 files that I'm interested in, I don't have to choose which one I take. I can just download both and share both with my friends as well, because bits can be duplicated at zero cost. So there's been this thinking and this very strong emphasis in internet studies to basically approach online sites as communities where people's behaviors are explained through more sociological and psychological concepts rather than the laws of economics, because it's been assumed that there isn't really that kind of give and take and scarcity that economics studies. But what we're seeing is that, as you said, increasingly this kind of artificial scarcities are being programmed into all kinds of platforms. Or in some cases, they've always been there, but they're sort of just being discovered now. Mm-hmm. Things like the kinds of things I mentioned earlier, so things like virtual currencies or points that you can earn for submitting great content, or virtual goods that you trade in an online game. So people have to increasingly in their online world kind of contend with this kind of scarcities, and they have to make choices. How many points do I have? What is it? What can I afford? And these things constrain people's actions in various ways. So what we're saying is that it's no longer sufficient to just analyze the online world through the lenses of community and identity and networks. But increasingly, in many places, you also have to think about the patterns of give and take and sort of laws of economics.
And the sociological and perhaps anthropological portions are not mutually exclusive with the economic
absolutely.
Portions, right?
Yeah. Absolutely. So this is obviously, I'm an economic sociologist. Mm. I'm not an economist. My co-author, Professor Castronova, he's an economist. Mm-hmm. And this book is very much a sort of application of elementary economics with due regard also for the limitations of those models and theories. And very essentially also what this book is, it's an attempt to show where and how you can apply economic theory fruitfully, and where you're going to go wrong if you attempt to apply economic theory. So we have examples in the book where if you take a situation like a virtual economy inside an online game, mm-hmm. and you bring our straw man, what we call the textbook economist, who is a sort of our straw man, a sort of very uptight economist who takes economic theory literally and applies it literally. So we show in the book how if you take an online game and you try to apply economic theory literally into it, you actually end up with a very poor understanding of what's going on, and you end up giving very bad advice that will not help the game designers at all, on the contrary. So what we show is that when you change your approach a little bit, and instead of focusing only on efficiency, which is what economists often think of when they're trying to design a market system, for example, you also think about things like social interaction and engagement. How do I facilitate, help people come together? Mm-hmm. How do I make the economy act as a social glue that keeps the community together and provides them with something to do and makes them interdependent? When you start looking at it from that angle, then you can actually very fruitfully apply very standard economic theory.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, one of the things you just said is that increasingly economies or economic type of things are being embedded into all kinds of online services and
that's right.
mobile services. And I'm just thinking about one of the buzzwords for the past couple of years is the idea of gamification.
Right.
And I'm wondering, did one come first, or is gamification as a result of this kind of increase in economics, or is the increase in virtual economies and those type of things a result of gamification?
That's a good question. So obviously gamification is a hot buzzword. In some ways, perhaps past its peak in the hype cycle. Mm-hmm. And certainly in the kinds of gamification that people are proposing and advertising, there are elements of sort of economic design there as well. In strictly historical terms, I think the idea of building kind of economic models into online services came first, mm-hmm. and then later some applications of that were branded as gamification, if that makes any difference. But I would like to draw a slight distinction between kind of manipulation of users mm-hmm. through gamification and the kinds of things that people often try to do with when they design a market into an online service, because gamification often at least the way it's often understood is that it's kind of attempt to manipulate the user into behaving in a way that's useful for the firm, but it's not clear how beneficial it may be to the user themselves.
Sure.
Whereas often when you're designing a virtual economy, actually what you're asking is, how do I help coordinate these people? How do I help these people work together and coordinate amongst themselves? Mm-hmm. So you provide a framework, for example, for a site like Reddit to reward good contributions and help really the site deliver what it's supposed to be delivering. Or on social media, when you create artificially scarce assets like likes, for example, which sure. If you think about them, they're artificially scarce in the sense that we could give everyone 1 million likes. It wouldn't cost anything to Facebook if they gave everyone 1 million likes, but then they would completely lose their meaning. So they've designed this kind of economy of likes into it, a scarcity of likes into it, in order to help good content bubble to the top and so on.
Sure.
And in online games, often what the point of the whole economy is just to be a fun thing for people to do, right? It's fun to engage in trading. It's fun to speculate about what might happen in the future prices of things and so on.
Sure. Now, one of the things that I find interesting and really good about the book is that you have a lot of examples that people can relate to. So you go all the way back to ICQ and
right,
the example
right.
of ICQ and the selling of ICQ numbers or identifiers, and then taking those into the present time and how people can relate to those things. And I was wondering, like, how much research that took to look back at these older platforms that people aren't even using
yes.
anymore.
Yes. Well, the kind of, you know, where this book comes from is my and Ted's past 10 years, in Ted's case, more than 10 years of research and study and also some consulting mm-hmm. In with these topics, with virtual economies. So a lot of the stuff like the ICQ stuff, it's grounded in my own experiences a long time ago.
Sure.
So, you know, we've accumulated this large treasure trove of cases and examples that really illustrate some of the points that we're making in interesting and fun ways over a period of 10 years. And so we're now selectively exposing some of the ones that we felt that were the most interesting and illustrative, and in many cases the most fun as well.
Sure.
And I'm glad to hear that you found the examples enjoyable.
Well, you know, I saw the ICQ one, and I was like, I remember ICQ.
Oh yeah,
such
yeah.
a long time ago, but
yeah.
Now,
but can you imagine? There's still people using it. And I went last year when we were finalizing the book, I went to eBay and I checked. People were still selling ICQ numbers.
Wow.
On eBay. You can buy an ICQ number on eBay today for $5 to $10 for an excellent, a short and notable number.
Wow.
It's like your personal vanity car license.
Now, one of the things you talk about, one of the other things I admire about this book is it's very international. There's no very set perspective concerning any of the economies. And one of the things I wanted to ask you about is the rise in virtual currency.
Yes.
Obviously, on public conscience is Bitcoin, but there have been other virtual or online currencies that have been around for
That's
a while.
Right.
Like
yes.
M-Pesa and
That's
those
right.
kinds of
yes.
things. So just wanting your opinion on that with respect
sure.
to your book.
Well, first of all, thanks for noting that the book has an international outlook. I've, you know, very consciously tried to maintain that.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, to some extent, it reflects my own research history, having worked in two different continents and done field research in three different continents. I think it's absolutely crucial also to have that perspective, because a lot of the innovation in this area, as you pointed out, it happens outside our little sort of North Atlantic bubble, at least the one that I live in right now. I live in the North Atlantic bubble here in the United Kingdom. And M-Pesa is an excellent contemporary example. But then in the book, obviously, we talk about a virtual currency called Tencent QQ's QCoin.
Right.
And it's indeed very relevant today now, as people are talking about Bitcoin. And we do talk about Bitcoin as well a little bit in the book. Mm-hmm. But what this shows is that there's already a long history of virtual currencies around the world. And even though technically they're all different, and certainly Bitcoin is very different from what has come before, it's a very clever, ingenious design. But many of the issues that Bitcoin is now dealing with have already been encountered in previous attempts to build a virtual currency or virtual currencies that have emerged spontaneously. So, for example, the way the Chinese government has handled Bitcoin parallels exactly the way they handled the Qcoin and mm-hmm. continue to handle the Qcoin, which emerged already almost 10 years ago. So there's certainly learnings that one can take from there.
Okay. Okay. Now, the question becomes for game designers or virtual world or social media designers is the rise of a virtual economy on any platform, is it inevitable?
It's a good question. I don't think it's inevitable at all. Mm-hmm. Of course, it depends on sort of where you draw the line when you define a virtual economy. Ultimately, human attention is, of course, always a scarce resource. Mm-hmm. Right? And if you build a completely open platform where there's no sort of attempts to shape or constrain things in any sort of way, that attention is probably allocated in not very optimal ways. People are not seeing the content they want to see or should be seeing. Mm-hmm. And we discussed this a little bit in the book, the question of how do you allocate attention. But then what you can do, what obviously many services today do, is that they start building into the platform all kinds of methods of trying to allocate attention. So you have sort of popular content come up on the top, and you have user ratings and so on. And then you're starting to kind of get closer to the territory where you can talk about a virtual economy. But really where it really becomes virtual economy under our definition is when you start having some kind of transferable markers, whether they be virtual goods or currencies or something that people that can be used to reward users, can be used to allocate attention, can be used to allocate resources. And I think you'll find that many of the most popular and biggest online platforms, once they reach that stage where the volume of information and contributions is just huge, they, in many cases, they find that they need to build in some kind of scarcity into the system, some kind of scarce markers. And then we can then that really is a virtual economy in some ways. But then, of course, also I suppose one the other side of your question is it inevitable that a virtual economy kind of emerges in a spontaneously and in an unintended way? Mm-hmm. Because of course we talk about two different kinds of virtual economies in the book. We talk about kinds which a designer consciously designs in order to to incentivize contributions or to provide a fun activity for the players of a game. But we also talk about, like the ICQ example, we talk about virtual economies that emerged spontaneously, inadvertently. So, of course, in the ICQ example, we talk about how people started trading ICQ numbers because some numbers were more desirable than others. You know, it's cool to have a number that says 11111. Makes, you know, it's like a vanity car license plate. And an economy emerged around that where people started producing these numbers and allocating them and finally buying them for real money. So we talk about both types. And it's not inevitable that this kind of spontaneous virtual economy will emerge on your platform. But there are certain very predictable circumstances in which it is very likely that one will emerge. Mm-hmm. So what we tell basically in the book is, look, if your system that you're building, if it has these features, don't be surprised if actually a virtual economy emerges without you intending it to emerge. And once it emerges, it's also very hard to sort of battle against the market forces. So there's many stories about how designers then try to fix things and to make changes in the design to kind of stamp out this unwanted trading. Mm-hmm. And in cases where the trading is harmful to the purposes of the system. We also talk about that. What are the economists' kind of recipes for dealing with what we call secondary market trade and negative externalities. Mm-hmm. And we discuss cases of how those have been and could be applied to digital services, especially to online games. We mostly talk about this in the context of this kind of real money trading of online game items.
Uh-huh. Now, are there negatives to either the formal creation of a virtual economy or virtual economies, / the, you know, spontaneous creation of a virtual economy? Are there drawbacks to that happening?
Yes, absolutely. So the spontaneous emergence of a virtual economy, that's easier to comment on, because so often what happens is that you have a virtual resource, which is by design artificially scarce. Mm-hmm. So either it's some really cool items in an online game, which only those players who have who have killed the main boss are intended to have. So they're intended to act as kind of signals that this player is a really accomplished player, right? Or in Facebook, likes are intended to signify that a particular brand or artist is popular, and therefore the number of likes is artificially limited. Mm-hmm. But then, because they're valuable to the owner, because having that virtual marker enhances your status, enhances your social standing. It can even give you very concrete financial benefits if you're a brand. Because of that, there's an incentive to try to then obtain these virtual assets via other means, right? So then people start trading them. You can go online and you can buy 1,000 Facebook likes, mm-hmm, for a few dollars. And obviously how that's done is that someone has either set up a farm of fake accounts on Facebook that will, upon instruction, like your brand, or someone has set up a network of tens of thousands of people in Southeast Asia, mm-hmm, who are happy for a very small payment to like your brand. And in the same way, in online games, what I've studied a lot is how this kind of professional gamers, often also in low-income countries, will produce the items for you. They'll play the game for you. And they're on the market. They will sell you that item. Mm. And so what happens when this market emerges, you ask, like, what is the downside from that? What is the negative side? What happens is that the marker or virtual good, as we call it, it loses its signal value. Because as soon as you know that that marker might have actually just been purchased, that it might not represent an actual achievement on the part of the its owner, it loses its signal value. It loses its meaning, basically. And this is a situation that in many services you really need to avoid. Mm-hmm. And for this reason, many services people are trying to find ways to block this kind of markets from emerging. And we'll discuss ways of doing that. Mm-hmm. And then to address the second part of your question, what are the potential negatives from kind of building a virtual economy consciously into your design? Well, here I need to point out that virtual economy doesn't, of course, have to involve real money at all. Mm-hmm. It can be a completely virtual exchange of virtual goods for virtual goods. The main point is that there's something that's artificially scarce, and that's being kind of exchanged and traded and produced and consumed. So that's a virtual economy for us. Mm-hmm. What are the potential negatives? It really depends on the application in question. But in very general terms, we can, of course, refer to the important finding in motivational psychology by Edward Deci about extrinsic and intrinsic motivation. That if you try to motivate people with extrinsic rewards, like giving them virtual points as a reward for posting content on your site or for showing up in your game, like many game developers now do, is that simply by showing up in the game every day, you get rewarded 500 points or something that you can use to purchase things. If you reward people with this kind of extrinsic rewards, there is a danger that you will crowd out their intrinsic interest mm-hmm. in doing whatever it was that they were doing. So this is on a very sort of general level, one of the potential downsides of designing a virtual economy into a system. And then there's many little pitfalls and gotchas. And that's what we talk about a lot in the book. So if you do decide I'm going to build some kind of a market or economy into my system, there's many ways in which you can do that wrong, right? And it can result in simply some unintended consequence.
Yes. Yeah. Now the book is very comprehensive. I mean, you all from brief introduction to theories of human behavior and basic economics, all the way to policy making.
That's right.
As well as what's the whole point of creating a virtual world and why the real world needs this. So what is it that you hope that readers and game developers or whoever takes from your book?
Well, we have basically three different audiences, you could say. So the main audience is the digital developers, especially game developers, but also other digital developers and designers. And I hope that what they will take from the book is a powerful set of tools from elementary economics that will help them design better online services and better games that do what they intend them to do. Because the problem is, in design, you need to know what are the consequences of your design choices. Mm-hmm. If I create, let's say I'm creating a marketplace for points, do I make it an auction-style market, or do I make it a sort of bazaar, or do I make it a more like a stock exchange-style thing? All of these things have different implications for user behavior and what is likely to happen in the system. And if you don't know what those likely consequences are, how can you make informed design decisions? Mm-hmm. So that's basically what I hope that the practitioners, that the developers will take out of this book. Then our second audience is scholars. not just economists, but all social scientists and also communication students of communication and culture and media who are interested in digital media. And to them, what we hope that they take away from this book is that they see that these virtual economies of artificially scarce markers are shaping and constraining people's behavior in the digital media in many ways and sometimes in rather unobvious and hidden ways. Mm-hmm. So I hope what they will take from this is a sort of appreciation for the fact that these virtual economies do influence digital media in important ways, because they influence who has power in these platforms, who has voice, what kind of behavior is rewarded, mm-hmm. and what kind of participation is valued, basically. And so to the scholars of digital media, we basically want to say that understanding virtual economies adds a crucial dimension to the understanding of social issues in digital media. Uh-huh. And then the third and final audience is policymakers. So people who make, on one hand, policy for internet and digital markets, but also economic policymakers. And to them, we're on one hand, we're kind of trying to show how these virtual economies work, and what are the sort of potential sort of ways in which, for example, consumers could get the short end of the stick there. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the need for regulation here, if any? And we're also arguing against some kind of ineffective, unhelpful forms of intervention in this kind of market. But also we're hoping to inspire with the final chapter, why the real world needs virtual economy design. We're hoping to inspire a little bit of debate about, could economic policy be done in some ways differently? Could we regard some of the economic institutions in our society in a slightly different way, mm-hmm. If we look at them through the perspective of virtual economy design?
Okay. Now, if we want to read more from you, after we've gotten our book, right? We want to read more from you. Do you have a website? Are you on Twitter? Those kinds of things.
Yes, absolutely. So I'm on Twitter as Vilile. That's V-I-L-I-L-E. Mm-hmm. V-I-L-I-L-E. Yes, that's right. And I'm tweeting about all kinds of things related to online markets, virtual economies, virtual goods, and mm-hmm. games, and so on. And also about virtual work, virtual labor, so on. And I do have a website, yes. It's myfirstname.lastname, .com. Uh-huh. So vili.leodonvirta.com. And I do have a bunch of papers there on virtual goods and virtual work. Uh-huh. But really, in many ways, this book now represents the sort of synthesis and culmination of all my work so far. So I do encourage you to read the book. And it has a lot of original material that's not in any of my papers or anywhere else in the web or indeed in any book.
Okay. Now, what's next for you?
Good question. So right now, my ongoing research is focusing more on marketplaces for online work. So things like paid crowdsourcing sites and e-lancing sites. And in the same way as in this book, we're dealing with the social, technical, and institutional underpinnings of markets for virtual goods and currencies and likes and followers. In the same way, I'm looking at the underpinnings of these marketplaces for virtual work and what do they mean for society. And in a very modest way, trying to address the question of future of work.
Absolutely. That's great. Well, thank you, Vili, for coming on the show today. Everyone, this has been Virtual Economies, Design and Analysis. This has been New Books in Technology. Thank you for listening.